Welcome to MGO Podcast 3.3. We've already gotten to 3. We're so awesome. Michigan beat Eastern Michigan by a lot of points. We talk about that. We talk about jet sweeps. We talk about Jeremy Gallen. Talk about how Brady Hoke is turning Michigan into Ohio State pre-trestle. And then we talk with Jamie Mack about how terrible Ohio State is. And Jamie Mack says several delicious things that are wonderful. We've played Western Michigan. Also, we have played Eastern Michigan, and we won that game handily as well. But I detected a little bit of discontent from you in your tweets in the first quarter.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
The play call.
I think we need to be honest with ourselves. We need to work through this anger, and we need to come to some sort of conclusion.
Okay, I think Al Borges just needs to give up on the whole I form thing in the first quarter because it's painful to watch. We haven't scored a point in the first quarter yet this season.
I may be using you as a proxy for my opinion so people don't get mad at me.
Okay.
I'm just gonna warn you about that. But so what, I mean, obviously we know what it is, but can you explain in a little bit more detail why you were so frustrated when I was posting about the Pitbull song in various strange ways?
Having Denard Robinson under center clearly does not really work out that well for Denard Robinson and setting up the rest of the offense.
All right, but why?
Because he can't throw out of it.
But why would that be the case?
He just looks uncomfortable back there a lot.
This is something that I think I might agree with because I don't remember him being this inaccurate last year. And it seems like, you know, when you're in the shotgun all the time and you're not really worried about doing a 7-step drop and you just need to set your feet basically, and then you throw the ball, that seems a lot easier than actually going through the whole motion of like coming back and then setting up. And because whenever you hear an NFL scout talk about drafting a spread quarterback, that's the first thing they complain
about. It's always footwork.
So that always seemed like a huge argument in favor of the spread to me because it seemed like a very complicated thing that NFL teams really wanted that you were totally ignoring and still getting good production out of.
Yeah. And in the post-game pressers, I think pretty much every game, either Hoke or Borges has brought up the fact that when Denard had issues passing the ball, it was because of his footwork. And there's a really easy way to cut that out, and that's just to stick him back in the shotgun all the time, where he's also a way bigger running threat and helps us set up the rest of our offense. I just don't understand why we keep going under center at this point. I mean, I know...
Well, they basically abandoned it after
they did. After the first quarter, that was it.
Which is alarming in an entirely different way.
Yeah.
Like, I was expecting that we would see them run mostly I-form because they could, and they wouldn't be doing great with it, but they'd be doing well enough that they would go down the field and they would be like, this is our offense. But that didn't happen, because when they ran power against Eastern Michigan, they lost 3 yards.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we have a max-sized offensive line.
Whoa, that's not true.
I mean, they're kind of close.
No, but that's, I mean,
but I'm not saying a max skilled offensive line, obviously, but a max sized offensive line in terms of trying to, if you wanted to bull up and run power all the time, I just don't think we have the guys up front who you can set up and run like that.
All right. Well, I've been seeing so many guys on the internets like bag on the offensive line this year.
I don't think they're bad.
Well, they're the same guys that they were last year.
Yeah.
And Michigan averaged 5.5 yards a carry last year.
Out of the shotgun.
Yes, out of the shotgun. Well, you've totally disrupted my chain of thought.
I know. I'm sorry, Brian.
you look very chagrined, which is good. Yeah. But so they averaged 5.5 yards a game last year, and they played into their strengths by using all the zone blocking. And I think they got a lot better in this game when they were running zone reads and stuff like that. There was one particular play where I saw a couple of combo blocks on the interior that worked out really well. And that was one of the plays in which Vincent Smith was basically permitted to like run into the secondary without anyone within 5 yards of him. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the stretch stuff. I would like to see the stretch stuff come back because I think that's a powerful thing that people have to worry about when you've got David Mulk trying to reach your nose tackle. And that opens up constraint plays that goes in with that. But even the inside zone stuff seems to work better than the power stuff just because they know it. I mean, they haven't really run a ton of power except as like a counterpunch for 5 years. So, but they've been zoning. I mean, they know that stuff. They've got it down. So,
yeah.
And I know that Borges isn't necessarily averse to running a lot of zone stuff. They ran a lot of zone stuff at San Diego State. So I'm hoping that we see the whole like power is our thing delayed. I mean, and they still need to run it because it's, I like having variety in the run game, but they need to make the zone, even the inside zone, I think, the thing that they base off of.
Yeah. And my more optimistic take on the game, which I didn't tweet out, but is that they knew they were playing Eastern. They knew that it was eventually going to become a blowout at some point. And though you never want to make that assumption in a football game, it was Eastern.
But wait.
They were able to take the first quarter and just set that aside and go, all right, we're going to see how this works and try to run it and keep running it. And then the first quarter was over and they went, all right, shotgun.
But you know, they get the ball back. It's 28-3. There's like 9 minutes left and they run Denard like five times.
I don't know how to explain that. I had no problem with them keeping Denard in because I thought that it made sense for him to work on his passing.
Yeah, me too.
And although it seems kind of cruel to start passing on Eastern Michigan at the end of the game, yeah, who cares?
We had like 49 yards passing at that point. It's crueler to run.
Yeah, I mean, we're playing this game as a tune-up, obviously, and so you got to use it as such.
Yeah.
But to then just take it and then run Denard five more times and let him get hit.
He had 26 carries.
Yeah.
That's like what he averaged last year in like the games where it was really important. Like,
that was extremely disconcerting.
Yeah, it's just like I guess that whole we're not going to wear Denard down thing. I guess that's out the window.
And to be fair to him, he hasn't gotten. I mean, I need to start knocking on every piece of wood I can find, but he hasn't gotten knocked out yet in a game.
That's true. What you should do is like when he takes off and run, you should like make a little check mark. Like, did he get hit at all? Did he get hit softly? Did he get hit moderately, or did he get blown up? And then, like, we can get a picture of, like, how many times he gets blown up.
And from what I could tell up there, there were a lot of runs where he was just able to cruise out of bounds. But there were also several where he was just kind of taken off of the middle. And while he's really good at avoiding a straight-on hit, he's still taking a hit. And that, you know.
Well, he got out of bounds quite a bit. I was pleased with that. And he's not, most of the time now, if he gets to the sideline, he's just like, all right, I'm going to go out of bounds, which is wonderful. Perfect. Yeah. Like, keep doing that. So, I don't think he really took a whole lot of a beating. He did take some pretty nasty shots in that Notre Dame game. Like, that one where he was going for the first down and Teal, like, stood him up.
Yeah.
And he was, like, moving backwards for, like, 6 yards before they blew the whistle. That was one of those where you're like, okay, you're good. All right, thank you.
Yeah, it was too soon to see Devin Gardner, and I did not want that to happen at that point. Obviously.
Nobody wants to see Devin just yet. No offense, Devin.
Yeah.
Wait a couple years. So, Denard and play calling and Vincent Smith. Vincent Smith had many, many yards on not many carries, and I've also seen the internet's call for Vincent Smith to be the starting running back, but...
No. I mean... He just had, you know, semi-truck wide holes to run through.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too.
I don't think he played poorly, obviously. I thought he looked good. I think he looks a lot quicker than he did last year. Not straight ahead speed faster, but on a lot of those runs, I thought if Toussaint had the ball on a lot of those plays, he's just gone. Because he's got the top end speed that Vincent Smith just does not have.
I think he is faster than Smith. I don't think Toussaint is like an A-plus speed guy. He's like a B-plus speed guy.
He was a pretty good track guy in high school. And, I mean, not quite like Shaw's credentials, but
that's true.
He had some really nice speed.
Yeah, I guess that is a good point. I mean, I saw him get hacked down from behind a couple times, so maybe I'm overreacting to a possibly injured Toussaint. But, yeah, Smith, you know, I've seen people credit his vision on the internet. It's like it would be really hard to not see, like, the... thing right in front of your face where it's just like, oh, there's no people here.
Yeah. And I actually was impressed by Toussaint's vision.
There was one late run where he was running off the backside and he had another sort of incident where he kind of slowed up, figured out his blocking, and then exploded into the secondary. And I thought that was probably the most impressive run of the day from anybody.
And there was one that I think it was only like a 5 yard run, but he had one where he was stopped at the point of attack and cut to the backside of the play between the guard and the tackle, and it was only 5 yards, but it was 5 yards that just...
wasn't there.
Yeah, it wasn't there. And also, unlike Smith, he does not go down at first contact every time.
That's true, yeah. He spun through a couple tackles and then he got up and, like, chest-pattered himself, which he deserved to do.
Yeah.
But I should go back and say that the most impressive run of the day was not the Toussaint run. It was the run where Denard reversed field and then broke that guy's ankles. And then
that play actually caused half the press box to break out laughing, which does not happen often.
No.
It is sort of emotionless up there, especially during the Eastern game. But it was just... He was so clearly toying with them at that point that it was hard not to laugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's you kind of, when stuff like that happens, you kind of get an idea why Denard walks around with a smile all the time.
Yeah, it's just like, I can do that. If I had the knowledge that I could do that, I would walk around with a smile on my face all the time too.
So yeah, Denard may be able to break people's ankles, but the passing, it doesn't go the right direction sometimes. Most
no.
of the time, usually. Taco and pants.
Even from the shotgun, unfortunately, which is yeah. the most disconcerting part about the whole thing.
Definitely.
I don't know how to explain it. It seems like he's shuffling his feet in the pocket and just now is not comfortable either passing from under center or the shotgun. I don't know. It seems like he's regressed.
Yeah, it does.
Which is,
but why would he regress?
I don't have an explanation for that. I don't know.
I don't know. The thing that I like, you have to build some sort of mechanism for why he regresses. And this is mine. Mine is that last year he had a lot of very short passes. Like he had a lot of bubble screens. He had a lot of hitches. He had the curl flat routes. And he didn't have a whole lot of options. He had like three or four things that he did. And that was good enough because he was Denard Robinson. But he was very confident in his reads and his throws. Mm-hmm. So throwing that flare, he can throw that flare. Throwing that snag route, he can throw that snag route. Throwing the deep curl, he can throw that.
Yeah.
He can throw all the bubbles and stuff like that. And he knew who he was reading. He had a simple read. He was either going to high-low the corner or he was going to horizontally read the linebacker to that side. And then it was just a matter of throwing it to the open guy. And when he had confidence and he threw it on rhythm, you know, he just whipped it right in there. And he wasn't Joe Montana or anything, but he was pretty good. Like he was accurate enough on 8-10 yard passes where, you know, that UConn game, he didn't pick up a single inaccurate pass.
Yeah.
Not one.
And I mean, he did finish what, top 20 in the country in passer efficiency?
It's top 20 passer efficiency. And that I don't think that he's as inaccurate as everybody thinks he is. It's just that his skill set is limited. But you can get away with that skill set because he's Denard Robinson. And Borges is a smart guy, and I think he's in the process of figuring this out. I just, you know, I really wish they hadn't spent all of spring and fall running a bunch of stuff that it doesn't seem that Denard's really good in.
Yeah. And also, I mean, one thing I have noticed is that, I mean, he seems to be very rhythm-oriented as a passer. I mean, like you said, the reads last year were, you know, quick reads where he had a pretty easy read to make and he threw to the open guy. This year, there's been a lot of plays where he's had a ton of time in the pocket, but when he stands back there and surveys the defense for a really long time, something about just being back there for that long, he just launches these cannons and they're just totally scattershot.
Yeah, yeah, it feels like he's got a comfort level with certain throws. Bloodied up good, really good, like you should, at least once in your life, so you know, nothing really hurts that much, it's a gun, intimidation, only there for a second, then it's gone, gone, yeah. The defense, we can just talk about the last three quarters, which were cool. I enjoyed the last
three
quarters.
Can we completely ignore the first quarter? Because that was frightening.
I don't think we can.
Yeah.
I wish we could. But we should say that the last three quarters were probably the most encouraging Michigan game we have seen since the 2007 Notre Dame game where they shut out the 2007 Notre Dame team.
And it is the only time we've allowed less than 3 points or less.
Yes, since then.
Yeah.
Because I was wrong that the Baby Seal University actually got 6.
Yeah.
Which I did not remember, but in retrospect, seems totally appropriate.
Yeah.
I'm just glad. I'm glad for that extra field goal because I like going back to Notre Dame 07 as like the last time Michigan's defense was good enough to like hold someone to a field goal or less. Yeah.
So we got that going.
Suck on that, Notre Dame. Suck on that, Notre Dame. So the thing that happened in the first quarter, to me, it seemed like it was mostly a contain issue. So we got a freshman defensive end out there. He's not really a defensive end. He's more of a linebacker, but he's playing down on the line. That would be Jake Ryan.
Yeah.
And that jet sweep got outside virtually every time. And then it's into the secondary, and
And the quarterback runs, too, were getting off the edge quite easily.
Well, yeah, that was true. But one of them, a couple of them were just like, okay.
He took off, and
it was just like, I feel like a couple of those runs were like, you're Alabama, and you're playing like East Texas State. And you know your defense is really good, but something happens, and then Gillette like runs for 30 yards, and you're like, oh, well, that happens. So, like a couple of those things didn't really bother me. And as we saw for the rest of the game, like it seemed like they kind of had their stuff together, albeit their stuff together against a team that couldn't throw the ball at all, even more than Michigan couldn't throw the ball. So, a little bit concerning there, but
yeah,
I'm more concerned about the direction of the offense than the direction of the defense, even though they had that ugly first quarter. Because I think that the first quarter seemed like there was a really obvious problem.
And they fixed it.
And they fixed it, yeah. So I was actually pretty happy with what happened in the and I don't think I've been able to say that in a long time. So it's the Eastern Michigan game, right? So there's not a whole lot you can take. But one of the things that you do get to take from a game like Eastern Michigan is kind of an idea of where the freshmen are on the depth chart.
Yeah.
And there was a pretty surprising, I think, addition to the secondary is that the first guy off the bench was Raymond Taylor, whose first act as a Michigan Wolverine was taking a personal foul penalty. But, you know, you're a freshman. We'll let that go.
Yeah.
So I thought Countess would be the first freshman off the bench. But
I made that assumption, too. And he was playing special teams also. So yeah, it wasn't Countess, like they were saving him for a redshirt or
anything. Right, yeah. Countess has his redshirt burned as well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a surprise. What occurred to me is that maybe they're – corner and nickelback are distinct positions in the defense. And it seemed when they brought Taylor on, they were in their nickel. And that, I hope, is maybe something where they're trying to get Thomas Gordon to be the free safety full time.
Which would be great because I thought he played very well back there.
Well, everybody thinks he played very well back there because he made one play.
I mean, he also had six tackles. And,
well, yeah,
and
but
they weren't passing the ball very
right.
well.
So it was
tough to tell exactly how he was doing in pass coverage. But on the one play where he could have blown coverage, he stayed with it on a trick play and actually made a play on the ball and an incredible play on the ball.
Fantastic.
So that was encouraging. I think I kind of overexcitedly pointed out that it was the best safety play I'd seen since Ernest Shazer or something, which might have been an exaggeration, but might not have been much of one.
Let's not bring up Ernest Shazer in terms of like our promising sophomore safety.
I was just comparing that to like the Purdue hit that Shazer had as opposed to like the Shazer career in which he couldn't really defend the pass at all.
Yeah, that's true. But I do agree with you. I think I've been high on Gordon irrationally for a couple of years, and now it's sort of the payoff. I liked him last year as a spur.
Yeah.
I thought that he was probably better than Johnson, even though Johnson won the starting job, but Johnson immediately got hurt. So very solid guy, solid tackler, not going to be Reggie Williams? No, Reggie, a Florida guy.
Oh, Reggie Nelson.
Reggie Nelson, thank you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Orson. So he's not going to be Reggie Nelson. He's not that fast, but he's fast enough. He's reliable.
Yeah,
and I guess we don't know that he's reliable yet, but we hope he's reliable.
He's appeared to be reliable so far.
Something we do not think about either of the two other options to start at free safety.
Yeah,
so I'm really hoping that he sticks there and they find someone to put underneath. And I would think that they would move maybe Floyd in, but we didn't see Avery at all until garbage time. Which is, I don't think he was hurt because if you guys hurt against Eastern Michigan to the point where you don't put him in. You don't put him in garbage time, right?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to be gained there. So did he really just fall behind Floyd? And for what reason? I didn't think he played that badly. Like, he struggled with Mike Floyd, but
So did JT.
So does everybody, yeah.
The one thing I did notice about Taylor, and maybe this is something that they're specifically looking at for the nickelback position, is that he was really physical. He was getting up, doing a lot of bump and run.
Really?
At least I noticed the couple plays where I really focused in on watching him play, he was really getting in the receiver's face and playing physically.
Huh. Maybe they just think he's the best tackler they've got there.
Yeah, or they like having someone throw off the timing of the slot receiver. I don't know, but I mean Avery is, you know, 170 pounds or so. Like right, he's not a big guy, so maybe they were looking for.
Well, I would think they would put Avery on the outside and then move Floyd inside because Floyd has never been a guy who I've thought.
Well, he doesn't particularly have the speed to cover outside guys.
Right. Yeah, and like so, I'm happier with Avery on an outside guy and then Floyd being like kind of a more physical older guy on the interior there.
But yeah.
I guess we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and we'll see whether that happens in any game besides Eastern.
That's a completely useful statement, by the way. I guess we'll see how that works out. Everybody has been enlightened by this statement. I'm appalled at myself. All right. The other freshman who made a bit of an impact was Frank Clark.
Yeah.
Frank Clark came in late at the weak side defensive end position, which isn't really the weak side defensive end position because it's in the nickel. So it's kind of like the defensive end slash linebacker position that Ryan was playing.
Yeah.
You know, had a couple bad plays, but on one particular jet sweep, it looked like they were going to get to the outside. Clark kind of fought to the inside, kind of baited the guy outside and then beat the tackle outside and forced the runner back inside where he had help. Yeah. And I thought that was like a +2 play.
And yeah, no, it was the play that kind of justified the preseason hype on him.
Yeah, which makes it so weird that it took him 3 games to see the field when Beyer got on immediately because nobody was talking about Beyer.
And he didn't look that good when he was out there.
No. No, he didn't. But it's with these things, it's just like you're picking your freshman mistakes, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, you're throwing true freshmen out in the field against, you know, very
anybody.
Early. Yeah. And they're 220 pounds playing with their hand down.
Yeah. That's not optimal.
No. At all.
No. I was hoping that we had moved past that, but evidently we have not. I mean, we're not going to see that against State. Like,
no.
Against State, we're going to see like the RVB as the strong side defensive end against the man ball formation, and we'll see how that works.
Yeah.
It might work fantastically because apparently State has no offensive line, but that's another segment with Jamie. So so Clark and Taylor were the two guys who kind of got on the field a little bit more than they had before, and then, of course, Will Campbell.
Who I was impressed by.
Yes. This is what was always going to happen, though. Will Campbell was going to get out on the field, and whenever Will Campbell did anything against the Eastern Michigan offensive line, everybody would be like, this is going to be awesome. And I'm the exact same way.
Yeah. Like, it looked great. I mean, he was pushing guys 4 yards into the backfield. It was, if nothing else, yes, it was just really fun to watch.
All right. Yes, but
we have no idea, obviously.
I mean, but it could have been worse. Like,
I mean, it's a lot better than him not doing anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've actually seen things like that from Will Campbell.
Yeah.
Like when he got in for like single plays against Baby Seal Hugh and didn't do anything. Or in the spring game when he was going up against second team offensive linemen and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And he's doing things now and they're not bad things.
Yeah, there were only a couple plays I noticed where he really got stonewalled at the line, and it was usually when he was double teamed, and sometimes you just chuck double teams into the backfield too.
You know, if Will Campbell can take a double team every play and just
stand there. Yeah.
I mean,
Mike Martin will greatly appreciate it.
Mike Martin, Kenny Demons, and Hawthorne especially.
Yeah.
Hawthorne's one of those guys, if you don't put a helmet on him, he's going to tackle you in the backfield.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping, man, because, you know, I watched Will Heiniger a lot against Notre Dame, and I thought he was easily handled by single blocking on a lot of plays.
Yeah. He did better against Eastern, but it was Eastern against Notre Dame, you know?
Yeah. So I just don't think that either of those guys, Heiniger or Brink, is going to be able to hold up at all. And so you really need Campbell to come through, and they're playing Washington some, and I haven't seen him do much either, but I'm glad that they're getting him some time.
He did have one play where he drove a guy several yards into the backfield, but it didn't have much to do. And it didn't have anything to do with the run, and the run went right by him, but he did push a guy very far into the backfield,
so he's got that going for him.
Yeah.
Why do I talk to you? You're so negative. I hate you.
It's funny. I'm normally extremely positive about Michigan football, but on this, I don't know. I just come across
so nervously.
I think that's just, no, you shouldn't. I think that's just my laugh, and I don't know. It is funny because I really am, like, you know,
you're a happy
trying to suppress
kind of
my
guy.
Homerism, and now, like,
really?
I might have tipped the scale a little bit too far the opposite direction.
I think people who have listened to these first three podcasts are like, worried for your mental health.
I'm actually really excited about what's going on. All right.
Let's clarify this then. Ace is not in need of Xanax.
No, not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
I'm encouraged by the fact that both the offense and the defense throughout games make adjustments that are positive. And the offense has something to fall back on that works really well.
Mm.
And the defense, every game has gotten better as the game's gone on. So do I think Michigan is going to run the table? No. Like, do I think Michigan has a chance to, you know, maybe even potentially threaten a double-digit wins? Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Really? What? The Big Ten is awful.
That Nebraska did not look particularly good. If Washington didn't fumble, I mean, I know we're going to talk about this later, but if Washington doesn't just cough up the ball on their own 1 yard line, that's a really interesting game. Michigan State just got clubbed by Notre Dame.
Right, well, this is another segment.
Yes, this is another segment. But so
you're ruining our segment.
I know. I'll just stop by saying
you're throwing.
I'm still encouraged.
You're still encouraged. All right. Briefly before we do get to Jamie, we should cover. Special teams.
Yes.
Which we have still not attempted a field goal. I know it says we've attempted a field goal, but that was an extra point.
A slightly offsetter extra point.
We've extended Gibbons' effective range from 20 to 21 yards, which I'll take, man.
Yeah, hey, if it goes in, I'm happy.
But that was not a field goal. We still have not attempted a field goal, and I'm happy about that. Jeremy Gallen is actually returning punts.
And catching them.
Yes, he's catching them first.
And then returning
them. Yes, and then returning them, which he kind of had the order mixed up last year.
Yeah.
And he's seeming like a plus player on those, which I it's like saying that we have a good pair of safeties, which is impossible to even consider. But
yeah. And on that first punt return, I really thought there was absolutely no need for that block in the back, and he was already kind of past that point where he was going to get tackled. I thought he had that on his own.
I thought that block in the back was a key block in the back.
Because I thought he was by him. I could be wrong, but I thought he was by him.
I did not think he was by him. I mean, he might have beat him anyway.
But the second one, he was one shoestring tackle away from breaking another one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's... he's becoming kind of like the Martavius Odoms of the offense, since Odoms is still laid up with a hand injury.
Yeah, although he did have one incredible block when he did get in.
Yeah.
And he shoved a guy about 6 yards out of bounds onto our own sideline.
I'm going to miss these Pahokee guys when they're gone.
Yeah, same here.
Like, now that Hawthorne's playing, I mean, the hit rate there has been very high. I mean, you got Smith and Odoms and Hawthorne, and Ash is the only one who doesn't look like he's going to be a contributor. And they're all tiny.
Except for Ash. Apparently, we just need to recruit tiny guys from Pahokee.
Nobody over like 5'6", well, 5'8" from Pahokee. Everybody else can stay there. But they're good football players, and I love that this coaching staff came in, and they started talking about Vincent Smith, and they were just like, "We love this kid," and like he's not the fastest kid, but he's one of those program guys who he's going to work real hard, and he's going to contribute on the field, and he's just one of those people where you kind of build a program and they're a large part of why it's solid year to year to year.
Yeah.
And speaking about that, this is a total crazy segue, but we are still on special teams. Kenny Allen.
Yes.
Preferred walk-on punter with offers from BCS schools such as Oregon State has committed to Michigan, which is, it's very Ohio State to me because Ohio State always has like three deep punters and they've got three deep kickers. And a lot of these guys don't have scholarships, but they don't have the problem year to year where it's like, is Olus Navage going to be any good? Is Gibbons going to be good? Is Brookhisen going to be good? They always have kickers.
Yeah.
And Rich Rodriguez, you know, you can maybe blame him for not recruiting, you know, recruiting Gibbons and that didn't work out and recruiting Farrah and that didn't work out. But we kind of had these problems with Lloyd from time to time too, where he would have like the year where it was like Brabs and Vinson and Nineberg. And Nineberg was a great tiny linebacker and kickoffs, but nobody could put it through the uprights.
No.
So I look at the recruiting that Hoke is doing, and all of these guys, almost without exception, are high academic guys. A lot of them are Midwest guys. A lot of them are guys who know the tradition of Michigan and aren't going to run away from it. They're probably not going to have a whole lot of transfers, at least relative to what we've been experiencing. And then you seem to see Michigan's walk-on program continuing in a way where it will actually produce useful players. So you've got the two walk-on OL, the guy that they snatched from Ohio State, Graham Glasgow. Mm-hmm. You've got the Yurden kid who, I mean, we might have something there. I mean, in realistically, neither of these guys is ever going to see the field.
Especially with the offensive line class that we're bringing in.
Well, they've got a year on those guys. But, you know, having those guys around helps you with depth and, you know, maybe you get something there that's a surprise.
And if nothing else, it helps in practice a lot to just have
right. And then,
able
and then
bodies.
Allen is the punter. I mean, he's insurance in case Hagerup doesn't get his head on straight.
Yeah.
And in 2 years, he's going to be a junior who's been on campus for 2 years. They'll know what they have. They'll know if they need to recruit a scholarship punter on top of him or if they can just give him. And then they can give another walk. I mean, that's just the kind of thing that makes it so that every year you can expect to win 10 games because you have just fewer holes.
Yeah. And no, it's why we always look at Ohio State's kicking game and go, how are they so good
exactly.
every year?
Exactly.
And it's
every
because
year.
Of this.
Yeah. So, you know, I was a little bit like confused about when they kept bringing this kid in and it's like, they don't have a scholarship to offer.
I was petrified that they were going to offer a scholarship.
I was a little bit confused by it, but they convinced the kid to walk on and I think that's a huge bonus. And that's like, if we're talking about like long-term favorability for Brady Hoke, I think he's done everything right that isn't, you know, figure out what to do with Denard Robinson, which
yeah.
is understandable. But we
and he's not wearing a headset, so, you know, I don't know whether that's completely
well,
on him or not.
His regime.
His I mean, charges are, yeah.
Eventually everything comes back to the head coach, yeah. which is why Richard Reed is no longer around here.
Yeah,
on that note,
true.
Let's talk to Jamie. We welcome in Jamie Mack. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, Brian and Ace. How are you guys doing today?
I guess I'm content.
Yeah.
It's not quite last week, but nothing terrible happened. So
it was a nice sun splash day at Michigan Stadium, and you know, I had my program ready to watch the backups play, and I didn't even have to bring that out. So
yeah, so there's always that. Since the best game in the league this weekend is either Michigan versus San Diego State or Ohio State versus Colorado. What we thought we'd do is we'd sort of do like a state of the Big Ten. And when we tackle Ohio State and Michigan, we'll talk about those games in particular. But we'll start from the top of the West Division, which appears to be Nebraska pretty clearly. But they did give up 38 points to Washington. They seem like a top 10-ish team, but I'm not really sure like they're exactly where they wanted to be before the season.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Nebraska. You know, on paper, I thought their front seven on defense looked elite enough to pretty much carry them through this division. And, you know, in back-to-back weeks, they've given up a lot of yards on the ground to Robbie Rout, Fresno State, and the Polk kid last night at Washington had a lot of success on the ground. Both Fresno and Washington, no offensive juggernauts in their own right, pretty much moved the ball. And if not for some special teams gaffes both weekends, they probably, you know, those games go down to the very, very wire. You know, I mean, they, you know, Nebraska's bailed themselves out with some special teams play. Or they might have, you know, I mean, last week they had the kickoff, and then yesterday the muffed kickoff opened up the whole floodgates.
That is like a Yakety Sax tape all in itself. That
absolutely.
That was amazing.
That was the Ty Willingham Huskies still kind of, you know, cinching it up there.
Yeah, so they're clearly the favorites in this division now that Michigan State and Iowa have kind of fallen back to the pack. But I think Wisconsin, if there's a hypothetical Big Ten championship game between those two, I don't think Wisconsin is, I mean, are they a double-digit favorite?
I would think so. I would obviously lean to Nebraska as the favorite in the division. You know, Michigan State and Iowa, they get at home. They do play each other. Nebraska and Wisconsin.
That's the Big Ten opener for both, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in a couple weeks. And, you know, that game had been a coin flip versus the Vegas line, and I wonder what it would be what it would be now. I wonder if people, if the betting public's opinion has changed at all, though, on Nebraska. I don't know. Because they had been considered the co-favorite with Wisconsin, but clearly through 3 weeks, you know, Wisconsin looks, you know, cut above.
Absolutely. All right, moving on to the second tier in this division. I don't really know what that is anymore. I mean, I guess it's probably Iowa and Michigan State, right?
Yeah. This whole division is just one big, you know, mediocre tier. Nebraska's playing defense is starting to pull themselves into that tier. Are we on Iowa or Michigan State right now?
We'll talk about Iowa. Got a Tony Gibson special to avoid a humiliating defeat against Pittsburgh, who just barely beat a terrible 1AA foe a week before. Yeah. 400 yards passing from Vandenberg, but I don't think they can feel pretty good after the last couple of weeks.
No, I'm concerned about Iowa. Their defense. I'm gonna start saying some things that might get me kicked off this podcast. But their defense looks a lot like Michigan's defense the last 2 years.
What? That's wonderful news, Jamie. I don't know.
Yes. But I thought that put me in crazy land. You know. That would put me in crazy land.
No, talk to me, baby.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, each of the last 2 weeks, they can't get off the field on third downs. They give up big, back-breaking third and longs. People are wide open all day. They give up big gains in the rushing attack, and they rely on other teams' mistakes to stop drives.
They look
terrible.
So their linebackers are kind of decimated, but I'm surprised about the secondary. I mean, they return Prater and Hyde, who seem like the best cornerback duo in the conference, and I know
they're talking about them as the best cornerback duo in the country.
Well, that's probably a little bit much. I know that they've got like another random walk-on as their safety, but this is Iowa. Like, that's what they do.
They turn those guys into Taylor Sash and whatever.
Well, I mean, I think that they've got four or five fifth-year seniors in the lineup that, you know, I don't really think have offered anything more than minor contributions so far. Then they got a lot of young guys. It's obviously not a very talented crew from a guru standpoint. You know, they've got as many 2-stars in their starting 11 as 3-stars almost. Wow. And while Iowa is apt to turn some of those guys into some big-time Big Ten playmakers, they haven't done that with any of these guys yet. So they're sort of in a transition rebuilding mode, and Iowa State and Pittsburgh basically moved the ball up and down the field on him. Last year, they only gave up as many yards as they did to Pitt and Iowa State twice, and one was to Michigan, a notorious yardage machine, and after the game was pretty much out of hand. And then the second one was Missouri with an NFL first-round draft pick at quarterback. Iowa State and Pitt? Come on.
Yeah, well, Steel Jantz, man. That guy runs around and then throws crazy things. I don't know. Right. So is Iowa, like, are we talking like a 7-5 year for this team? They're already lost to Iowa State. I mean, is Michigan going to be on par with these guys? What's going to happen when these two teams meet up? I can see this being competitive, very competitive.
Oh, yeah, I think so. We'll hit them eventually, but, I mean, I think just in the span of 8 days, the whole, you know, at Iowa looks a lot easier than at Illinois all of a sudden in November. Yeah. And the thing is, I think they could be headed to 7-5, but the way this division plays out, you know, especially if Wisconsin can take care of business against Nebraska and they trip up somewhere else, Iowa could still be sitting at 7-4 going into Thanksgiving weekend with a shot at a share of the division lead.
That
just pathetic.
That sums up the Big Ten better than anything else.
Well, their starting schedule, they play UL Monroe and then they have a bye. Their starting Big Ten schedule is at Penn State, Northwestern, Indiana, at Minnesota.
Jeez.
That could set them up, you know? I mean, that could really set them up.
If
and then they play Michigan and Michigan State at home to start November.
I just got a grimace from Ace when I said if Purse is back. But you have no idea, like, how in Iowa's head Northwestern is.
Oh, absolutely.
That's true. They just lost to Army.
All right, we have 10 more teams left. We have to move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
Michigan State got basically hammered by Notre Dame, and this is, like, one of those things where, like, if Notre Dame stops turning the ball over, well, then they can be powerful. They turned the ball over 3 times. So it's still 31-13, and Cousins, like, throws a terrible interception. But before that terrible interception, there's 4 minutes left, and they're down 18 points, and D'Antonio punts. And it was a no-moss moment on par with Ohio State's no-moss moment. And That offensive line looks horrible. They lost a guy, I think, for the year. I'm not sure if that's official
yet. The Burkhardt kid?
Yeah, he looked bad.
Looked bad.
And, I mean, they couldn't run at all. I think they had 27 rushing yards.
Yeah.
Cousins threw 54 times, and they just... That offensive line looks like a huge, huge, like, game-changing weakness there. I don't know. What was your take?
Well, it was already a weakness spot for sure. You know, the France kid at one tackle, I think a lot of people had serious doubts over. You know, they flipped him over on defense, and they didn't even expect him to win the starting job, and he won it, you know. So, I mean, I thought that was sort of a weak spot. Now the other tackle goes down, and they brought in a kid that hadn't played it before. He was in junior college last year.
Yeah, so he's a JUCO transfer.
They're shaky at that position, And didn't D'Antonio kick a field goal, too, when they were down 18 or something like that?
Well, they faked a field goal.
I know he did something where he kicked a field goal where the math in my head was like, dude, that's going to make it impossible for you to get a back.
Well,
cover,
so what happened
is... You've been derping with me all day, and this is the last derp you do.
The field goal actually cut it to 15, I think. So there's a very vague chance that you can... You know, score two more touchdowns and get a 2-point conversion. I thought it was obviously wrong call it too, but
yeah,
it's D'Antonio, so it didn't even register. I'm just like, okay, that's D'Antonio.
By that time, he had already buried himself in my mind with his decision. So
like that fake field goal. How obvious was that? Like
great. When the Notre Dame announcers catch on to your fake field goal.
It's... So first of all, there's last year. Second of all, it was 3rd and 10.
Yeah,
it was 3rd and goal from like the 10-yard line, and you throw a bubble screen to get down to like the 2, and then you call a timeout.
Yeah, like, that should have been their 2nd down play, by the way. But
right, it's the only person who doesn't like do the fancy thing after like going for the 3rd and 10, like we're just going to cut the yardage down here, is Lloyd Carr.
Yeah,
that's like the everybody else. It's like, oh, trickery. No, not very trickery.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't understand. You know, you get the ball to start the second half, so just kick the field goal there. You're down 8. Come out and set the tone in the second half with your best stuff. And then if you really have the itch to run that little bitty play, run it after you score that touchdown to start the half. You know, surprise them on the point after with it. You know, I just thought the whole thing was...
That's an excellent
point. Then he ran a goofy play action on 3rd and 1, and then... Then he had two flea flicker type plays that both blew up in his face. One, they sort of got lucky and it didn't bite them, but then 4 or 5 plays later, they tried something again and it crushed a drive that they were about ready to get back in the game on.
Yeah, like the play where you line up the quarterback as the wide receiver and then send him on like a reverse. And it's just, that was like a Tecmo Bowl play. And what happened with Notre Dame is they called the same Tecmo Bowl play. Yeah. And Robert Blinton blew it up for like a 15-yard loss or something. I'm happy that it looks like Mark D'Antonio has like one speed, and that speed is derp. All right, we have to move on.
Good to know they worked on that Wildcat play, though, you know, all the first part of September while they were sandbagging against, you know, the tomato cans. So that worked great for them.
Yeah, well, they've got a few more weeks to put more stuff in the can for Michigan.
Yeah.
Northwestern loses to Army, which is, I don't know. I mean, Army did hang with San Diego State. San Diego State just beat a Washington State team that seems vastly improved. So this might be a good addition of Army, but good addition of Army is still a good addition of Army.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you know, I mean, I could say that Army won a bowl game last year, and they played San Diego State pretty well last week. But of all the Big Ten results yesterday that we're kind of hand-wringing about, you know, and I'm a notorious Northwestern apologist, but this is the one I'm hand-wringing the least about, mostly because we've seen this out of Northwestern. You know, they've lost, I think, twice, like maybe 4 years running to teams that ended up with a losing record. And they rarely get out of non-conference unscathed, losing to Duke and Syracuse in past years when Northwestern would go to a bowl game and those teams would only win two or three times. Plus, I mean, it's just bizarre. The underdogs always cover in Northwestern games, so they're always playing close games. It's competition invariant. I know that's a phrase you like.
I do like that phrase. That was Michigan's
defense. I mean, it just doesn't surprise me. In fact, I wrote a piece on Northwestern on the blog.
Just
back
covered
in August, and I said something that, you know, wouldn't surprise me for them to win at Boston College, beat Iowa again, but lose at Army. And they lost an Army. So, hey.
Well, the...
Hey, all right.
That's good for a gambling blog. So, the thing about Northwestern is that they're still starting Kane Coulter. And
yeah.
At this point, you have to wonder if Persa is going to be healthy ever.
I know. Those billboards, that's some pretty expensive sandbagging. I mean, geez, I know. I mean, they were like... They kept saying all summer, it's just a matter of his conditioning, you know. It's just a matter of his conditioning. The Achilles is fine. And now, yeah, they're still playing Coulter. It's like, what are you guys waiting for?
Yeah, he's obviously not all there. And
are they going to redshirt him? I mean, is this on the table? I don't know.
Please?
Yeah, I would take that, man, because we need that momentum. All right, Minnesota's terrible. Let's just skip them. Michigan, we're feeling, I don't know, kind of indifferent to positive, depending on how your mental state is.
Mostly because of the rest of the Big Ten.
Yeah. But
yeah,
so
for sure.
Obviously the I-Form stuff is not super good, but what are you thinking right now?
Well, you know, Michigan, I guess if you're into gambling and you do it online, you can get quarter bets down. Bet against Michigan in the first quarter. My gosh, you know, they haven't come out well yet in any of their first three games. But I like the fact that they've outscored their opponents 41-9 in the second quarter after last year. Last year, the second quarter was an outright disaster. It buried them in almost every single contest. But then again, two of these games are against Western and Eastern. I like the fact, though, that other people, I know that we're still waiting for the tailback to step up, I guess, but you know, I thought lost in the storyline last week was just how the wide receivers won the game for Michigan. Gallen had another good game yesterday. I think he is emerging, you know, as a player for us every down. So I mean, I do like what I see in some spots. I'm still not sold on the defense, but everywhere I look at the Big Ten, I see, you know, averageness.
Yeah,
I think we could take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's really hard to look at any of the defenses in the conference that Michigan will play and see them being able to contain Robinson on the ground. I mean, maybe Michigan State, maybe Nebraska, but if the offense is we run 26 times with Denard every game, that might actually work out okay.
I mean, it might.
As long as he stays healthy.
Yes, I mean, right. Let's forget about that part. Let's just pretend that's going to happen.
Let's just, you know, Michigan, I want to see what they do next week. You know, I think they're going to have their hands full with the Hillman kid. And Lindley is a quality quarterback. Well, let's just see. I mean, let's just see what happens. You know, if the pattern continues where defensively second through fourth quarter they sort of lock down a lot better, I'll be even more encouraged.
Yeah, I was going on the assumption that San Diego State game wasn't going to be much of a contest based on last week's Army game, but that was before I saw the results from both Army and San Diego State last week. So that, I mean, kind of a huge swing game for this year.
Like, and Hillman scares
me. And Hillman's a player. Yeah. I mean, Hillman's a player, and, you know, I just think we're going to have our hands full with him. whether they lost to Washington State yesterday or not. So, I mean, they've got somebody that they can come in and set the tone with, and I'm actually interested in seeing this kid. You know, everybody talks about Hoke, and he likes, you know, the big man ball and all that. You know, Hillman's a little dude. Hillman's Vincent Smith size.
Well, the disconnect between what Hoke says and what his teams did was never more vast than it was at San Diego State.
Absolutely. I agree. Sometimes those press conferences were just an alternate universe that those of us who are addicted to college football just don't live in.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, we should move on to the other division. And this is just a crazy thing that I typoed, but
the runaway division, Wisconsin's in it, right?
Well, Wisconsin, let's just stipulate that they're so boring to talk about because they could be awesome. So we're not playing them. We're very happy about this. Let's move on. Indiana's terrible. We're not playing them. Purdue looks just completely awful. They beat up on Southeast Missouri State, but before that, losses to Rice, almost lost to Middle Tennessee State.
Impending four touchdown loss to Notre Dame coming up.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not a team that should threaten Michigan. I'd be surprised, right?
No, not at all. And it's in Ann Arbor last Saturday of October after a bye week. I feel like we're going to get really divergent results this year and last year after the bye week.
God, mirror lips to God's ears, Jamie.
Sorry.
So, I think the most interesting team probably in the entire league is Illinois. I was, I was kind of high on them in the preseason, and they have just beaten Arizona State. Shielhaas looked okay, but more impressive yet was the defense, 14 points. Osweiler, is, I think, a quality player. I think that their offense is well constructed, and they just couldn't punch the ball in the end zone very much. And if you've got Shielhaas in that option offense, and I really like Jason Ford. I think
I do too.
He's a guy who, you meet him 3 yards downfield and you've given up 7 yards.
Yeah, I like Ford too a lot. He's a good player.
Yeah, and I like their receivers. It's just if Shielhaas can really put that offense together, third best team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, well, I think that by far the biggest eye opening thing that I saw yesterday in the conference was their front seven on defense. I mean, they went at it.
They did.
They had six sacks on Osweiler. They were constantly pressuring him. And I also like their corners. They play a real physical game. Now the Shielhaas kid, he only threw the ball 16 times last night. So, they didn't really they didn't need him to throw it a lot last night. I think they kind of like those numbers, and they hit on some big plays. He was 10 of 16. He didn't have a great game. But I think it was like 15 yards a catch when he did connect or something like that.
Yeah, he's kind of a lot like Denard, where it's just his legs and then you're hoping that he can put together the throwing. But they have a triple option offense and they run a lot of different stuff, and I've always liked it. But
they do appear more dangerous despite the fact that I think Denard's obviously a better player, because they're like all of a sudden running back you know they go from Mendenhall to LeSure and Ford, Shielhaas can put up a quiet 105 yards while Ford rips off 150.
Absolutely. I mean, I put one of those guys on Michigan next to Denard. Jesus.
I know.
I like Toussaint. We might see some stuff from Toussaint, but
now I wonder what. I was very, very impressed with them. They have a shot at going 6-0 going into their Ohio State game, which they play in mid-October, and they host that game down in Champaign.
Dude, right now I would make Illinois a touchdown favorite easy.
Yeah, I would make Illinois the favorite as well, and that just seems weird to say. But then again, Ohio State was an underdog in virtually every game when they finally did release future lines. Now, they never released the Illinois game for them. But, you see them against a live opponent, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is why they're an underdog against everybody.
Yeah.
And I would absolutely make Illinois a favorite against Ohio State right now. They play they host Northwestern, at Indiana, at Purdue, at Penn State. They host Michigan. They host Wisconsin the second to last weekend of the season.
Wow. They could be.
This team is going to – they're in the mix for sure. And even if they falter a little bit, they've got a puncher shot at knocking down Wisconsin, whatever that's going to be worth in late November.
Man, just looking at their schedule, I think they're going to be undefeated going into that Wisconsin game.
Like, it could be.
Unless they zook it away in a couple games. But that – I can't see anyone in their division other than Wisconsin beating them.
No, I can't either. They dominated Penn State last year. I know the game's in Happy Valley this year, but
it doesn't matter.
Are they going to be able to cross the street against that defense?
No.
And the one
Ohio
I saw
State,
play last night against Arizona State, no way.
No. Wow. I should have took Illinois in the pick six. Oh, well. All right. So, Illinois, most interesting team.
You should have kept them at 19th in your preseason poll.
I should. You know how much that is killing me right now? That is killing me. But people convinced me that I was wrong, and I was wrong about being wrong. So there you go. I do want to touch on Penn State just briefly, because Penn State is they beat Temple with basically a gift at the end of the game. McGloin can't throw. Bolden can't throw. Paterno is not a coach anymore.
Alive?
Somebody asked me, Braves and Birds tweeted this. Everyone was going to make the obvious Weekend at Bernie's reference at Penn State, which was something people were talking about 10 years ago. And now it's, I think, almost literally true.
Yeah.
So
between he and Al Davis, this is developing into a cottage industry. I think. Corpses running the show from the press box.
Yeah. Wow. So that sucks for them. And I would like to take advantage of the recruiting opportunities in Pennsylvania, but we can't because we've already loaded up on recruiting opportunities in Ohio. So
we'll take, I guess.
Yeah, we'll deal with that situation.
Penn State is weird because, it seemed to me that, you know, Weekend at Bernie's joke, that's actually kind of dead on, because it's like everybody had seen this week was more concerned with Paterno. Was he going to be on the sideline or not? He wants to be on the sideline, blah, blah. I'm like, how come the storyline isn't, where are all the playmakers? How come the storyline isn't, where's the offense? This is 3 years now. Where's the offense, you know?
Well, I think they've got a couple. Like, I like Moy and I like Red, but they just don't have a quarterback, and I don't think they have an offensive line.
No.
I don't know. So Penn State is terrible. We don't play them, which is unfortunate this year. I would rather play them than Illinois, which is a really weird thing to say, but there you go. And then finally, the demon, the great hell beast, the great Satan, Ohio State. Just tell me, was watching that game against Miami better than sex or way better than sex?
it was way better, I think.
Yes.
They just said they had nothing.
Oh God, that was so awesome!
As Michigan fans, what gave us more hope yesterday? Was it, you know, Michigan State's 1.3 yards per rush, 23 yards on 23 carries, or was it Ohio State 35 yards passing on 1.9 yards per pass? It was clearly Ohio State's, because I think Michigan State's going to solve that running game issue.
Yeah.
But Ohio State, that those quarterback stats were crazy.
They were insane. And
we have issues with Denard's passing. I'm sorry.
It was even worse than that. They had 35 yards, but 22 of them came on like the last drive where like Braxton Miller was in Miami was playing 20 yards off.
Yeah, those were only two completions.
Only two completions. And Bowserman was like 2 of 15. And like, you know, Miami is not that good a defense. They got a bunch of guys back from the defense that got shredded by Danny O'Brien at Maryland. But I was watching that Toledo game and I was like, you know, I just don't know how this team is going to move the ball against a non-MAC defense. And the only thing that kind of gave me pause in that game was the fact that when they were just kind of lined up and ran directly at the heart of Miami's defense, they were going right down the field.
Yeah.
And they're going to get Boom Heron back, although I thought Jordan Hall was fantastic. And
I thought the Hyde kid ran pretty well, too.
Yeah. Well, Hyde's kind of a... I'm not a big fan of him. I like Hall a lot better because he's...
Oh, I agree. I just thought they had a nice little 1-2 punch going there for a couple drives.
Yeah, I mean...
Where like the Boom Heron, you know, not being there wasn't the issue, you know?
Absolutely. If I was Ohio State, I would put Braxton Miller in, and
yes.
I would just...
Yes, yes.
I would just run zone option.
I mean, no, don't put him in.
But like if Bowserman's going to throw like that against a real defense and he's a senior, you put in Miller, you put in these two running backs, and you just kind of... Pretend it's 1978, I think.
And you run Illinois' offense.
But yeah, exactly. That's exactly what
Absolutely.
You do. And then you've got Devere Posey on the outside for two bombs a game that may or may not be open. I mean, I would go full Georgia Tech, Illinois, if I was Ohio State. We'll see that's what they do.
I would, too, because I don't see there's no upside in having Bowserman in there.
No.
You know, those first couple drives last night, you know, they had a nice six-yard run on first down on their first drive, and then they try doing one of those wide receiver swing passes to the Fields kid. And it was honestly, it was like watching our 2008 offense. It was like watching Stephen Three try to swing that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't working at all. And then the next play, they tried to go deep, and I think it was to the same kid. I don't mean to pick on the Fields kid, but he wasn't open. He had no separation. There was none there. And then on the second try, they actually tried to run with Bowserman.
It worked against Akron.
Yeah, but it's like, what are you doing, Coach Fickle? You know, this is not good.
Then,
you're ruining your chances at keeping this job.
The timeouts.
And I want you to keep this job.
The timeouts at the end, like, they weren't going to win that game.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, if that was my head coach.
At least try.
At least, all right, we're maybe going to get the ball back. Maybe we'll force a field goal. Maybe we'll throw an 80-yard bomb and it'll work. Like,
yeah.
Maybe we'll run the hook and ladder. Maybe... No, that guy has MMA to watch. He's not going to take any of these timeouts because he has MMA to watch. It's like taped MMA from like 2005, but he's got to watch it.
You know, I know that Miller, that Braxton, you know, sort of coughed up the ball on that drive in the second half, but, you know, I think that at that point in the game, that kid's just pushing too much.
Well, he had a hard time even holding on to the ball. Obviously, that's a tough situation for a freshman to be in, and I can understand maybe the rotation that was going on, because when Miller was in the game, it's not like he was doing anything special either. But
yeah,
at this point, I think you just have to throw everybody overboard.
I mean, they pulled a mid-drive.
I think the guy that I think he's the guy they have to go with, but on the same token, he definitely did not look as composed or as polished as you would expect a recruit of his caliber who came in to the spring.
That's true. He was.
And what's interesting is this kid kind of led an upstart sort of high school team at the highest level of Ohio Division, and he was downright unbeatable when he was healthy. Almost dragged him to the state title this year. The year before, he had him 5-6-0 before he went down with the season-ending injury. I had talked myself into, like, this kid is a guy that can play right away, and he just sort of, he looked a combination deer in headlights, but he almost looked almost like he was going to break down a few times.
Yeah, well, that never really happens with Ohio State quarterbacks. Like, Troy Smith was awful early.
Yeah.
Pryor was pretty much awful early, and, like, I just don't necessarily think their offense is very conducive to, you know, young quarterbacks. It's a lot of play action reads and stuff like that and handing the ball off, and it's tough to make yards when you don't have a really reliable quarterback in that situation.
Yeah. I thought what was interesting was it seemed like Miami had twice as many athletes out there last night. You know, this is supposedly our most talented team in our conference. And I know they've got a couple people out on suspension.
They just did not.
I mean, Miami just looked to be, you know, twice as athletic and just twice as good, and that just was a shock.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that Miller could make as many yards as he did, because he was like 188 or something, and he's a great back, but
he's fast.
Yeah, I think he's a fantastic back, but, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a fantastic back going up against an Ohio State defense. I think that would be the most worrying thing. Is you're going up against Ja'Cory Harris and he gives you, you know, three gifts basically, and they still score 24 points on you without having any semblance of a passing game.
Yeah, and the defense isn't the side of the ball that's going through, you know, missing the players from suspension or going through the, you know, transition. I know they're replacing some starters, but, you know, they've got 4 and 5 stars that they've, you know, locked in to be the next set. And you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can get in gear this year with this crew, because this is 0-for-1 as far as playing a quality team. And we talked last week how the Toledo game was basically even on points if you score it like a boxing match. And I saw Boise in person on Friday night, much better than Ohio State, not even close. And you know, they're vulnerable against Colorado next weekend, and I can't believe we're saying that, but they absolutely are. You know, the Stewart kid is a good little running back. They could definitely do what Miami did last night. And, Tony Clemens caught a deep ball last night for Colorado. Maybe he'll beat Ohio State before Michigan does.
That would be awesome. All would be forgiven with Tony Clemens if he catches a game-winning touchdown against Ohio State and rips off his jersey to reveal a Michigan jersey. He can come back to any alumni function he wants.
And then records another track with David Cohen, just to really top it off.
The story with Clemens yesterday was he became the first player in NCAA history to play a game in the Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12.
I think that's a record that's going to stand for a long time.
It could.
Because the Big 12 is not going to exist.
Yeah, they're not going to have many more players. But they are, I mean, you know, and that's the thing is they're vulnerable against just about anybody on their schedule, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the trustless coaching staff can navigate that.
It feels like they're already
fired. And not fall into a hole. I mean, you know, I don't... saying bad things about Ohio State is almost like talking about a no-hitter in the 7th or 8th inning. But there's Texas 2010 out there, in my opinion.
Jamie.
What?
That's wonderful. Thank you, Jamie.
You know, Texas wasn't downright awful last year, but they were just down enough in a hard enough league. You know, it's interesting to see if the Big Ten is hard enough. But Ohio State's in the division with the two teams that look really good, Wisconsin and Illinois. They got to go to Lincoln, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see Penn State, Purdue, or Indiana beating them. Illinois can do it. Wisconsin can do it. They play Nebraska, don't they?
Yeah, in Lincoln.
They're not winning that.
Yeah, I don't see them beating Wisconsin or Nebraska, and Illinois is in Illinois, and we've already said that we would favor Illinois.
And Michigan State, I mean, their offensive line isn't very good, but they're not even going to have those suspended players back for that game. So It's tough to see him 5-7, but
yeah. Oh well, yeah, I mean, you know that I, you know, I don't really think it's going to be like that. But
six
I think
and six
think,
is right there, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, but you know, it's, you know, I mean, hey, you know, they're it could be dependent on the Michigan game.
Yeah,
you know, something like that, a situation like that playing out. You know, I mean,
we'll see.
I would have so much confidence if Trestle was still on the sideline that they would be able to navigate this on the positive side every step of the way. But right now, after last night, you know, I just don't. And I just don't. I mean,
it feels like Fickell is fired.
Posey coming back is going to be a big. Is going to be an interesting thing. You know, can they get something out of the passing game with Posey back? Because that he's an NFL caliber wideout. So you know, that could be something that saves them. You know, Texas didn't have a guy drop in midseason like that last year to become a playmaker on their offense. Posey could do that.
That's possible. I mean, but 8-4 is tops right here, right? And there's no way that they're doing any better than that. And that is Fickell's out, man.
Yeah.
So, Briante Dunn, come on down.
Please.
Come on down.
So, so it was a good weekend in college football, even though Michigan didn't really do anything. It was a fantastic weekend, all things considered. Thank you for joining us, Jamie. We'll have you on next week.
Outstanding, for sure.
Yes. All right.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the MGoBlog podcast. I'm Ace Ambender alongside Brian Cook, and I was grinning like Denard during that entire Ohio State segment. What?
The game is over.